High-flying stocks see a slowdown, and Reddit investors are seeing red after online brokerages restrict their trading.
People were saying, let's leave Robinhood if they're not actually going to allow us to trade what we want on its platforms.
And why economists expect the U.S. economy to rebound later this year. Plus, New York has a thin crust, Chicago has a deep dish. But what is Detroit-style pizza? Good question. It's Thursday, January 28th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. The U.S. economy grew rapidly in the last quarter of 2020, up 4%. But that was not enough to offset the economic contraction from earlier in the year. Our economics reporter Harriet Torrey says economists are expecting a rebound later this year.
The economy is expected to grow about 4.5% or 5% this year, which would be an extremely, extremely strong year. But bearing in mind that, you know, in 2020, we did see the economy contract by 3.5%. So, you know, 2020 was a difficult year because of the pandemic. But it looks like the fact that, you know, more stimulus checks are coming, that vaccines are on the horizon, and that there's just a lot of pent-up consumer demand. You know, people have been at home for months. There's a hope that once things get a bit more under control, consumer spending will really pick up in the second half of 2021, and things will hopefully start moving again.
New jobless claims ticked down last week to 847,000. Claims had been trending higher since November amid a surge in coronavirus infections across the country. They are still well above the pre-pandemic peak of 695,000. Health authorities in South Carolina say they've identified two people who were infected with the South African variant of the coronavirus, the first cases in the U.S. Authorities say neither had traveled to South Africa and aren't connected to one another, suggesting that the strain could be circulating in the community. Preliminary studies suggest that both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines will still protect against the new variants. But as a precaution, Moderna says it's testing a booster shot and developing a new vaccine targeting the South African strain. We report exclusively that office leasing company WeWork is in talks to combine with a special purpose acquisition company, or SPAC. Also known as blank check companies, SPACs enable businesses to go public without going through the traditional process of an initial public offering. People familiar with the matter say the deal could value WeWork at roughly $10 billion. That would be a far cry from WeWork's peak valuation in early 2019, when a SoftBank funding round pegged it at $47 billion. The news comes more than a year after WeWork's high-profile failure to pull off a traditional IPO. And White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says the U.S. is outraged by Pakistan's Supreme Court decision to release Omar Sheikh, the man convicted in the 2002 killing of Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl.
But we call on the Pakistani government to expeditiously review its legal options, including allowing the United States to prosecute Sheikh for the brutal murder of an American citizen and journalist. And we're committed to securing justice for Daniel Pearl's family and holding terrorists anywhere accountable for their heinous crimes.
Pearl was the Wall Street Journal's South Asia bureau chief. He was abducted and killed while reporting on militant networks in Pakistan in the wake of the September 11th terrorist attacks. Coming up after the break, why online brokers are pumping the brakes on the latest trading frenzy that's shaking Wall Street, and how retail investors are responding.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
The battle between Reddit traders and Wall Street took a new turn today. Popular online brokerages, including Robinhood and Interactive Brokers, restricted trading in some of the hot stocks like GameStop and AMC. They cited recent volatility that had sent the prices of those stocks soaring. Robinhood wrote in a blog post that it restricted transactions on 8 stocks to position closing only, so people who didn't already have positions on those stocks weren't able to buy any. That slowed the surge. GameStop fell 44% today. AMC fell 57%. But it also brought pushback. A group of investors has filed a class action complaint against Robinhood, alleging that it had no legitimate reason for restricting trading and that it deprived them of potential gains. Robinhood declined to comment. These investors and the Reddit forum Wall Street Bets that launched the trading surge are not the only ones questioning the moves. Joining me now with more on the latest twist is Wall Street Journal reporter Akani Otani. Hi, Akani. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Akani, it's been a crazy couple of trading days. We're now seeing some firms restricting trading of stocks like AMC and GameStop. Why are they taking that action? Is it an issue of too much volume or technical issues? What is their reason or justification for restricting trading, especially on certain stocks?
The number one reason that brokerages have been giving is just the surge of trading volumes that they've been seeing. They've said that it has made it difficult to make sure that things are running in an orderly fashion. And in fact, we have seen several of the brokerages have trading outages in the last couple of days, which they've blamed again on just the sheer number of users piling into a number of these stocks at the same time. And the other reason that they're targeting these specific handful of stocks is just because those have been the names that have been really talked up on social media, and as a result, really had this sort of just unbelievable ride in the last couple of days. And again, I think that's just made things a little bit difficult for the brokerages just to make sure everything is happening smoothly.
To that point, might this lead to more problems for newer platforms like Robinhood that are trying to be the trading sites of the future and for traders who want to get in on the action but can't?
Yeah, it was funny. Even just in the early hours of Thursday, I was seeing some other alternative trading sites and platforms being promoted on Twitter and downloaded in the iTunes App Store, just because people were saying, let's leave Robinhood if they're not actually going to allow us to trade what we want on its platform. So it is an interesting story, especially for Robinhood, which has really been one of the main players in this sort of day trading frenzy.
As of yesterday, the Securities and Exchange Commission and the White House said they were monitoring the frenzied trading of the past few days. Is there any indication they could take action here? And what are you hearing for and against more regulation?
I think that's probably one of the biggest questions that people are asking at this moment, because it is sort of a gray area. Typically, regulators have taken action against traders who have intentionally shared and spread false information about companies and then use that to sort of pump and dump the stock, really drive up the stock prices and then dump it. But that's not exactly what we're seeing here. I mean, the type of action that we're seeing on the Wall Street Bets forum is more people talking about just trying to drive a certain stock's price higher and higher. But they're not necessarily saying anything fundamental has changed about the company that suddenly makes it a more promising play. So that is definitely different from the type of enforcement that we have seen regulators take in the past. But the fact that we have seen the White House acknowledge it's watching this and saying even Janet Yellen is watching this indicates that this has definitely fallen under regulators' radar.
And we've heard from some lawmakers on that issue as well, right?
Yes, a couple of representatives have tweeted in the last couple of days their concern, especially AOC, of course, has been one of the sort of more vocal critics the last couple of days of what the big institutions have been saying about these day traders. You know, the common sort of criticism being leveled there is that a lot of these hedge funds have been able to get away with quite bad behavior in the past. And so the idea that they would suddenly be angry because it's a sort of small guys winning now, it seems a little bit hypocritical to them. And so we've seen her already mention that there should be an investigation into why a lot of these brokerages suddenly limited access to trading.
What does that say about the shifting power dynamic happening on Wall Street right now and whether it'll have staying power?
It's funny because I feel like the narrative earlier this week was that these small guys are suddenly showing up the big guys and sort of showing that they have, as one of my sources told me, a seat at the poker table. But then today, I feel like the narrative sort of flipped again where it was, oh no, the big guys do really run the show because brokerages are suddenly able to cut off access to potentially millions of users all at once. So it's really going to depend on what we see happen in the coming weeks. If, you know, regulators do take action one way or the other, or, you know, on the other hand, if we do see these brokerages sort of just reopen access to these trades again.
And what about the forum behind much of this, Wall Street Bets on Reddit? It also shut down briefly yesterday, citing technical difficulties. Is that also a volume issue as traders are sort of rushing in here? What's going on in that case?
I think the simplest explanation was that they were not expecting to get the surge of posts that they did. This was a big subreddit, you know, even before this week, but the number of people who joined in just the last couple of days, I think, really caught everyone off guard. And it was to the point where the moderators were saying they were not able to keep up with the posts. Like, they couldn't screen all of the posts coming in real time to make sure people weren't violating the rules, which include bans on mentioning certain types of highly speculative assets and bans on intentionally manipulating the market. Obviously, that thing is a little bit more in debate right now because some people do believe the forum is guilty of market manipulation. But and they did open it up again, maybe roughly an hour after they took it private. But that brief outage, as well as the shutting down of their Discord server last night, as well as the limits that we've seen put in place by the brokerages, all points to just how quickly this story has grown sort of out of scale.
Now, I have to ask you, because you actually spoke to the man who started this forum, Wall Street Bets, and he seems just as surprised as the rest of us here. What did he tell you?
He was not who I think a lot of us were picturing in our heads. I think the sort of more condescending commentary on social media tends to portray the average Reddit user on Wall Street Bets as being this, you know, 20-something-year-old living in their parents' basement and trading discretionary income. But this is a 39-year-old man. He has a consulting job. He founded Wall Street Bets while he was at a serious job at an international bank in DC. And he really wanted to have an avenue on the internet where he could discuss more high risk, potentially high reward trades with other people. Because at the time, it was really things like bogleheads, Vanguard followers, that was the dominant sort of source of commentary online. So, you know, in one sense, he definitely succeeded. I mean, that's incredibly the source of commentary that we're seeing online. It tends to be these high risk, high reward plays. But on the other hand, he didn't necessarily anticipate it was going to have 2-3 million followers and that there would be a lot of sort of distasteful, sometimes even racist, sexist commentary on these sites slipping through moderators' hands. So he definitely has been, I think, taken aback by this whole thing, but also acknowledges that his goal of sort of increasing the average everyday individual's access to trading and discussion of trading, that has been successful.
Wall Street Journal markets reporter Akani Otani. Akani, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, Pizza Hut launched a new deep dish pizza this week. It's rectangular with tomato sauce on top of the cheese and a charred crust, and it's called Detroit Style. If you've never heard of Detroit Style, you're not alone. Even many Michiganders are raising eyebrows. But our reporter Mike Colias says the pizza actually goes way back to a local hangout called Buddy's.
And this Detroit Style goes back to the 40s, and there was an Italian immigrant who just owned a small bar, and he actually used these utility pans that were used in assembly plants to hold like nuts and bolts and other hardware and stuff. And he thought that would make for a good pan. So he developed it that way. So it does have a following. It's just a little less known, you know, it doesn't automatically sort of conjure up the vision of like a deep dish Chicago or that thin crust that you get in New York. And so, you know, a lot of people take it very seriously and there's different favorite places that they go in the Detroit area and beyond in Michigan. And you've seen Detroit-style pizza actually in the last few years has popped up, you know, like kind of higher-end pizza places in places like Brooklyn and California, like all over the country, really. And I think that's a little bit of kind of Detroit has come on in recent years in terms of kind of a food scene. And I think there's some spillover effect there. So it's kind of quietly become at least a talking point in the pizza world.
Side note, Michigan is home to two of the nation's biggest pizza chains, Detroit-based Little Caesars and Domino's, which is based in Ann Arbor. Pizza Hut, though, started in Kansas. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.